Let's go straight into today's message. Today's passage is from Matthew 22, verse 36 through 40. I'll read it for us. Matthew 22, verse 36 through 40. Verse says, page 705 in the Bible in the back. It goes like this. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and prophets hang on these two commandments. Man, it's a really famous passage. And so I'm sure most of you guys are familiar with it. Let me ask a question before we continue. There are a lot of laws that are given in the Old Testament. A lot of them. Does anyone have any idea about how many are in the Old Testament? How many laws that God gave? And the person closest to the number, I'll buy you lunch. Okay. Last time, by the way, Kathy got a question right, and I did buy her lunch. And so I don't just say that. She's a witness. Okay. So the person who is closest to this number will get a free lunch from me. Okay. So anyone? 1,000? No, not quite. Less than 1,000. Oh, close. I know. Okay, I'll give you two more guesses.
500,
okay. Anyone else? 726. I feel like this is Price is Right. Hire a lawyer. Yeah, yeah. Yes, Lala. 610. It was 613. So we'll give it to Lala. Nemo, your family is amazing. Wow, good job. 613 laws in the Old Testament. That's a lot of laws. You know what's interesting is that they count the number of commands that are given in the New Testament. And because people always say, Old Testament is a lot of rules and laws. If you count up all the commands that Jesus and the disciples give, Paul gives in the New Testament, it comes out to 1,050. So sometimes people kind of like compare and contrast. 613 laws in the Old Testament and 1,050 commands. I guess they're not laws, but God tells us to live like that or do this, you know? And so it's as if they're laws. And it's funny because people usually have like a perception where, oh, Old Testament is all about rules, following rules, and, you know, like how restrictive is that? In New Testament, Jesus is so free. He loves us. We could do anything. But it's not necessarily so. But here, he kind of takes the 613 laws that the Jews were following, and on top of that, they created many more to interpret the 613. And so by the point that Jesus was alive and he was actually on earth and doing stuff, there were thousands of laws that people had. And so they were living their life. Every day they're thinking, okay, I need to do this, so how do I do it? Well, I need to follow these rules. Do this and do this and do this and do that. And so it had everything to do with what you ate, how you dressed, how you walked, how you looked at things, how you interacted with people. And so your whole life was controlled. And the way the religion was practiced back then, the people who followed the rules best were considered the holiest. You know? Because that you could see. How do you see someone who has a deep connection with God per se? You know, that's like intangible, right? A child like who's 7-year-old might have the deepest relationship with God in our church, but it's hard to quantify that. But it's easy to see someone like me, a pastor who quotes Bible, who prays out loud, who looks holy, and say, well, pastor must be holier than the child. And so it's kind of like that back then where you had all these laws and rules God gave. On top of that, they created a lot more. And the holiest person was the person who practiced it outwardly, you know. And that's how they kind of looked at religion. Sometimes in churches, sometimes it does look like that still. You know, person who is religious on the outside is kind of regarded as the holiest. They could be. They might not be. Because it's hard to quantify our relationship with God sometimes in a way that human beings understand. And so here's the thing. In this passage, right before, the verse before, it basically says, a Pharisee wanted to test Jesus because he knew the laws. He's a scholarly person. He's a really smart person. I imagine like a professor maybe of a seminary who knew all the Bible. And he wanted to test Jesus on his knowledge. I mean, he knew 613 plus probably a couple hundred or a thousand more. And he wanted to see, hey, out of all those things, what is the greatest commandment that the law gives? Out of all of them, what is the greatest law? It's like, you know, we look at the laws of the United States of America, and I ask you, what is the most important, the greatest law that we we have? And so it's a hard question to answer, right? Because, again, how do you pick one? First of all, do you even know what the laws are? I don't even know, right? So there's so many of them. And so it's really, really difficult question. So Jesus says this, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. And so he takes 613 plus human-made laws, and he broke it down into two. He says, these two are the greatest things that every Christian needs to be aware of if you love Jesus, if you love God as you live your life. He says, you need to love God with everything that you have, all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. And then second is, you need to love your neighbor as yourself. And so I just want to talk about those two things, because how we live our lives as a Christian often reflects what's really going on in our heart. Jesus says this, right? He says, there's only one way people will truly know that you are my disciple, which is love, how you love. It's not how much you know, how much you give. It's not how much, how often you go to church, or what your title is. You could be a deacon, elder, or pastor. All those things don't mean that you love me or you're a follower of me. It says how you love in life shows that whether you know me or not. It's a really, really important challenge, because oftentimes, church is not the place I would go first to see love. Sometimes, but not all the time. In fact, if I'm ashamed of something, if I'm going through a difficult time, let's say my marriage is breaking apart as a pastor, I would never go to church. I'll go to my friends. Because at church, I would feel like, well, people see me as a pastor. They don't see me as a brother in Christ. I think people will be disappointed. They'll think negative thoughts about me. I'm not sure if they will embrace me. But my friends are my friends, right? They don't look at me as a pastor, David. They look at me as David, their friend. And so, when you think in that context, it's funny how the church is, because God says it's the way we love that separates us, that anyone can go through anything in life, and yes, they will somehow find some kind of acceptance, a place where they could heal and reform and change their ways, you know? And so it's really, really interesting. And so Jesus says, look, there's two ways that we need to love. One is us and God. And how do we love God? How do we love God? How do you show love to God? And so I just want to ask you guys to turn to the person next to you. How do you show that you love God? It could be you personally or how you've seen personally, okay, around you. How have you seen other people love God? And so ask yourselves, okay, if God is saying, hey, you need to love your God, and that's really, really important, how do you love him? Practically speaking, every day. So if you guys turn to a person next to you, I'll give you guys a minute to talk about it. There is no wrong or right answer. I mean, there is wrong and right, but I'll pretend that there isn't so that you don't feel bad. Okay? Talk to the person next to you. I will ask random people. That probably means I'm going to ask you, Audrey, so you need to talk about it. How do you show love?
How are we doing today?
I'm just saying, how do you love God? Today, or... Okay, I'll give you one more minute. How do you love God? Okay, let's come back. How do you love God? Does anyone want to share? Yeah, I will call on somebody. Terry, thank you. Okay, sounds good. Anyone else? Oh, okay, Eugenia. You think about him all the time. Okay, that's awesome. Wow. What else? See, if you have a good answer, you want to just give it out before someone takes it, and then I call on you, and you don't have an answer. Okay, let's have two more people share. Benny. Go, okay, there you go. That's good. See, that's really tangible. Very good. Okay. One more person. Yes, Yusuke. You pray. Okay, good. Yeah. Very good answers. Okay, they're all true. Okay, it says, love your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. And there are like a million ways that we can love God. That's why it's easy and kind of hard. Because there are many ways for you to love God. And so you could kind of do this and you love God. You could do this and you love God. But it also means that maybe God wants to be loved many ways. And so you have a lifetime to practice that. Like it's really, really interesting. And so, for example, you guys are here on Sunday. This is the way we love God. We show up. We honor God. We sing. We just sing. That's the way we love God. You're listening to His Word. We love God. Like Benny said, you listen not only, but you actually do what He told you to do. That shows love. I don't know about that. I give a message and I ask a question to you guys, right? How do you show love to your wife or your husband? I remember Jeff saying, being perfectly obedient, right? Jeff practices that, to my knowledge, in perfection. And also my wife is learning from that, so it's not good. But okay, there are many different ways. Many different ways. It's the way we love each other, right? There are a lot of things that we could tangibly take from the way I love my wife, and I could say, you know what, I want to love God like in a similar way. Like I think about her, I want to do things for her, and so I do things for God. And so loving God sometimes is easy. But like I shared, the hard part is it's everywhere. Now, harder passage in Luke, that kind of goes hand in hand with this, is in Jesus says it harder. You know, He says, you need to love me more than you love your husband, your wife, your kids, anything. In fact, He doesn't even say love, He says hate. He switches it. He says, you must hate your husband, you need to hate your wife, you need to hate your kids, hate people around you, because He's saying, compared to the way that you love me, everything is so secondary that you can't even say, you know, like I'm at 100 and your wife is 80. I'm at 100, everyone else is at 1. You know, like, because God is that much greater. And sometimes people have a really tough time, you know, with that idea. Like, hate is such a strong word. We try not to use it. You know, what does it mean? And so when we interpret it, we can't just interpret it by that verse. We have to look at the context of the Bible. And when you look at the context of the Bible, the Bible teaches us to love our parents, actually honor them, respect them. In fact, far more than even our culture would tell us to do. And so as you interpret it, you realize what He's not saying is hate. He's saying, look, He must be number one. And when you read that whole context of that passage, it just talks about that. Before you commit to Him, He says, read all the fine print. Before you sign a contract to become my follower, you need to know all the clauses. Because you don't want to make a commitment and later on say, well, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. He says, no, make sure. It's like, you know, if you're going to build something, you want to make sure you have enough materials, right? You have enough money. If you're going to renovate your house, you know, you want to make sure that you have enough funds. If you're going to go to war, you want to make sure that you're going to win. Just like that, He says, know what you're getting yourself into. Because to be a follower of me means that you need to take up your cross and follow me. And cross symbolized nothing more than death back then. Meaning death to yourself. Everything that you are, you're going to give to God first and foremost. Now, the hard thing that I think people have oftentimes is there's a weird connotation. Like, to be a Christian must mean that you must be poor. You can't be happy. You can't do anything, you know, that's fun. Do you guys watch Duck Dynasty? I'm asking because I know the answer already. So anyone, do you guys even know what Duck Dynasty is? Yes, good. Anyone watch one episode? Okay, one of my friends, she loved it, and so she made me watch it. It's a terrible show. I no longer take her recommendations and anything. But it's basically about, like, these people who live in Louisiana who are, like, rednecks. And they love God. So they have long beards. And so it's just you just watch their life. And it's just so different from mine. It's just somewhat interesting. But anyways, they have a daughter. The main family, her name is Sadie. You guys know Sadie Robertson? She was recently on a TV show. Does anyone know what the TV show was? Dancing with the Stars. Okay? And when she was on the show, it was so interesting. She said, I wanted to be on it because I wanted people to know that Christians could dance. You know, if you're a Christian girl, you could actually have fun, you know, wear a dress and dance. Like, her dress, she actually makes prom dresses. She's 19 now. But she made prom dresses because she designed them because she wanted to wear design dresses that are appropriate for Christian girls to wear. You know, like, it doesn't have to be super revealing, but at the same time, it could be something that you could wear and you don't have to be ashamed of. And so it's just really cool. Like, here's a Christian girl who's, like, I think 18 at the time, wanted to be on this show just to show that you can have fun as a Christian. You can dance. And her dad and her uncles had to approve the the attire that she had on the show. And if you ever watched the show, like, women are half naked all the time, right? And so it was just really interesting, the whole dynamic. She actually got second place. She was just a great dancer. But many, many people think that you have to be poor, you can't be happy. You know, if you're a Christian, you can't do that. And when you read verses like that, you're like, well, it sounds like that. You have to give up everything for God. But what he's basically saying is, in life, he created things. He made things a certain way. And so things are best when you trust him with those things. And so your relationship is best when you trust him and you give it to him and you follow the rules that he created so that you interact best. I can't tell you how many times I've seen relationships where, because people hold on to it too tightly, because they care about somebody so much, and it becomes something selfish and just something destructive, that it no longer is beautiful. And I've seen it over and over again where people hold it loosely, and yet you love intensely like God intended. You see something beautiful happen. The older I get, the more I live, the more I believe firmly that God's way is the best way to live in life. It's not the hardest way. It's the easiest way. How you hold money, how you hold your future, your dreams, your goals, everything is easier when you say, God, I want to be a doctor, but I'll give that to you. I'll be a doctor if you want me to. And you give that, and you trust the person who created you, who knows you, who molded every single aspect of who you are. He knows what you're going to be happiest, most fulfilled, whether you're a doctor or a pastor or whatever it might be. It's not that you can't do good things or you can't be rich. All of those things are best when you give to them. You know, some of the people that I think are the most miserable people in my life, personally, are the people who have a lot. They're always worried. They're always like thinking about more and more and more. It's funny because Danielle and I, as you guys know, we like to do things in seasons. And so, like, recently, Danielle got into tacos. And she likes tacos. So we ate tacos 7 days straight. No joke. Thankfully, she's done with that season. I was starting to reach the limit of tacos. And so we watch TV shows and binges, and lately we've been watching House Hunters. Does anyone watch House Hunters? Okay, good. So it's a show. Who has not watched this show? Raise your hand. Okay, so let me explain. So it's a show where they've said, you know, actually people have said it's kind of like faked, but these couple or person, they're looking for a house. They have an international version. They even have like an island version where you buy islands. And so they go and they have a realtor. They show them three houses. Okay? And they have a budget in mind. They have a list of what they're looking for. Usually couples don't agree on what they want. And then they go look at three houses. And as a viewer, what you do is you're trying to guess what they're going to pick. And usually they pick the cheapest one. I don't know. People always care about money. And so it's so funny because like, you see a couple and like the husband is usually the easier going and the wife is a little bit pickier. And so, you know, you start thinking like, oh, I don't know why he married her. It's just funny. So Danielle said she never wants to go on that show with me because I'm going to look better. I probably will. But anyways, and so we're watching this show and I was telling her, I don't think we should watch this show anymore because, you know, you watch this show, it makes you want to have things. And actually, we live in an apartment, and we're totally happy, and we feel like it's a God-given thing. But all of a sudden, you're like, well, I want a house. It's not like such a human thing. You start looking at things, and you look at what people have. You look at what your friends have. Even though you're content and you're fulfilled, all of a sudden, you're like, why don't I have that? It'd be so nice to have a house. And I look at those houses, and I'm like, why do two people need five-bedroom houses, four-bedroom houses? Like, so much space. I think about all that work cleaning and all that kind of stuff. But that's how it is. The life that we have, there's a philosophy that the world gives. There are many different philosophies to live by. God says, my way is best. And when I say everything, all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, I want you to give me all that. And so how you view people, how you view possessions, there are a million ways for you to worship God through that. I'll tell you one way that a person blessed me and worshiped God. And I shared this a few days ago with a few people. There was a family that I know really well. That's actually the family that gave me the van, right? The husband used to work at Cisco, and he had an offer from another company. And one of the reasons why he decided to leave Cisco and go to that company is because they felt like God wanted them to bless me with a certain amount of money for my tuition at that time. And if he quit and went to this company, they would get a signing bonus. And so he quit that company and went to this new company, and they ended up giving me $10,000. For tuition. Now, I never asked them. I know them personally. Like, I'm their their children's pastor. But there you go. He quit a job for signing bonus, not for, like, to buy a house or whatever. again, to buying a house is great. To buy a car is great. To give to friends is great. But they felt like God wanted them to bless me. And so that's what they did. I think they loved me and they loved God by doing that. And so when we say there are a million ways for you to love God, every day you have there are a million ways. You know, you walk by a homeless person, not every day, but maybe God's leading you to buy that person something to eat. You bless him, you love God. Maybe that day you don't have to do anything. You just take a step back and instead of, you know, going out with your friends or whatever, you just listen to music, Christian music for an hour. You say, God, you know, I just want to spend this time with you and me for 1 hour. Turn off my phone. My laptop's gone in my own space. I'm going to ask people not to disturb me. That's how I love God. Million ways for us to love God every single day. And God says, in every aspect, don't just love me by coming to church on Sundays. Don't just love me by giving me offering. Love me by doing that and this and this and this and this. Every day, all the time, I want to be your number one. And that's what it means. I think when we have human relationships that we love deeply, we don't just love them in one sense. You know, as a husband, I don't just say, you know, I'm going to love you by providing for you. I'm going to come and work hard and give you money so you can spend it. No, she expects me to spend time with them, interact with her. And I think later on, we do have kids. Apparently, we're going to have at least two. She's going to expect me to spend time with my children as well. There are many different ways for us to love people. Just like that, God says, I want you to completely be devoted to me. Now, it doesn't mean that, again, you can't do anything else. Because the way we live our lives naturally brings glory and honor to God too. He's loved when I love my wife. That's why it's just cool. Because we just have to go through our days, except be mindful. Understand that much of what God is calling you to do is already been stated in the Bible. Now, it's connected to that. And it says, verse 39, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. And this word neighbor is really powerful in many ways. Because if we're supposed to love them, we need to know who our neighbors are. And he's not obviously just talking about people who are living next to us. Yeah, like, for example, unfortunately, I don't know who I live next to. I just know that these Russian ladies live next to me, and they don't always speak English. And so Jesus, and they have this discussion of who your neighbor is. And basically, the extent of that story goes where he says, your neighbor is your closest person in your life to the person that you hate the most, your enemy. Pretty much everyone in the world. You know, it's not just Christians, not just your family members, not just your friends, not just your close friends, not just acquaintances, not just people you see at church, but to the person that you even hate. They're your neighbors. And so he says, look, directly connected to how you're supposed to live very, very best in this world has to do with how you love me and how you love each other. And it's a really, 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 really important question for us to ask. I know a pastor who just really got wrecked when he got involved in human trafficking. And he got involved in the sense like he learned about it. And so he was a pastor down in Southern California. And at that time, he had 5 children, varying from age, I think, 4 to about 12. And as he traveled around the world, he started learning about kids who were, you know, constantly in these brothels, kids as young as 4 or 5. And they have sex like 14 hours up to today. And he said, you know, like he would come back, and he would stay up late at night because he has a daughter. He has several daughters. He's thinking about someone's daughter is living like that every single day. And he said, how can I continue to live the way I live without trying to do something about that? There are millions of things, again, all around us. Yesterday, a bombing happened in New York. We still don't know what happened, but, you know, that's the world we live in. You don't have to try very hard to find somebody who's in need, who needs help. I think one of the greatest compliments that I ever received from a friend was this. She said, I kind of knew that you're a good guy when I saw you eating with people who never wanted to, like other people did not want to sit next to. And it was at a church. And he said, you know, I always saw you during lunchtime sitting not with people, group of friends or whatever, always looking for people who are sitting by themselves. Again, not very hard things, but you look around and you see how your life could be a blessing to somebody else. Loving your family members, loving your brothers and sisters. Some of the hardest things is to love people that are closest to you, especially when you're younger, you know, like when I was in high school, when I was in youth group, luckily my brother and my sister, we didn't fight that much, but man, sometimes you just don't want to say something nice. You just have an attitude. You just let it out on people closest to you. For some of us, the biggest challenge is not to help the homeless, but to help people who are closest to you. God says, look, you need to love your neighbor as yourself. How you want to be treated, you want to make sure that people are treated in that way. This is such a famous saying that people who are not Christians live by this. I've seen my friends who are not Christians have plaques on this in their houses. They have like little things. because that's what the philosophy they want to live by, right? And yet, as Christians, we don't always focus on those, right? You want to be a great Christian? You want to love God well? You want to be a person that leaves a legacy of walking with Jesus? He says this is all you have to do. Love your God in every sense and love your neighbor as yourself. Love, love, love. It is something that's going to define you as a Christian. And I think the question that we all of us has to ask is, if somebody had to answer a question, like let's say we ask people closest to us, our husbands, our friends, or I don't know, our coworkers, if you ask them, hey, do you find me as a person who's like loving? You know, if there's like an average person who loves in an average way, would you say I'm above that? What would they say? So you guys might even say, well, you know, it's work. I need to focus on work. But Jesus says we're supposed to be loving all the time, right? It's not just outside of work or outside of family or only at church. Like everyday sense, the way you talk, the way you act, how you treat each other with respect and manners and whatnot, do you show love? What would they say? Would they say that you're a person with a lot of love? Or a person who is, yeah, I mean, you're fair. you're pretty okay. You know, I think you're average. Then if those are the answers that you think you will receive, I think we have to reevaluate ourselves. Because God says, look, everything boils down to these two things, 613 and plus. I think 1,050 commands in the New Testament, you combine all those things, Jesus says, hey, if you could just focus on these two, you'll naturally touch all those other things that God told you about. The way you love me and the way you love others will show that you are from me. So let's all pray together. And I just want to pray for you guys, and I just want to give you guys a moment. Let's just ask for something, okay? No, we don't have to do many things. I think we could do one thing. So let's break it down. And I just want you guys to pray to God in your heart. Is there someone in your life that God is calling you to be a little bit more loving towards? And let me tell you, as a pastor, I've met some weird people. And I've honestly met some really unloving, unlovable people. It's just not easy to love people sometimes. And I've seen people hurt others pretty badly. And so if you have a tough time loving some people, I understand totally. But let's just ask God. God, is there somebody that you feel like I should be a little bit more loving towards because you want me to love you more? And if there is, I want to challenge you to think of one practical way for you to show that person that you care about him. Now, it could be somebody that you actually have a really good relationship with and it's easy. It could also be somebody that's actually really hard. But let's not just listen to this, but let's do something about it. Is there somebody right now in your life that God is reminding you of? And there's one practical thing that he's saying that you could do to show that person that you love them. It could be writing a letter to say, you know what? I just want you to know I really care about you. Or it could be apologizing. Say, I'm really sorry for the way I talked to you yesterday or what I said to you. I really didn't mean it. I really do care about you. Or it could just be, you know, buying them lunch, calling them, a million ways. Is there one thing that you could do? If there is, I really hope that you will make a commitment to him to do that within the next 3 days. Unless it's impossible, physically impossible for you to do it within 3 days. For you to do and just follow through this action. Let's pray together. God, I just want to thank you so much. I think you reminded all of us, at least one person, because no one's perfect, that we could show a little bit more love to. Or somebody maybe we love deeply, but we could just also remind them, go extra mile. For you, for me, you reminded me of my brother. Someone I do love, but I haven't talked to recently. I haven't really followed up. And maybe I should be a better older brother to God. And so, Lord, remind me and lead me to treat him better and show him that I truly care for him. Just like that, I believe the God that you spoke to every single one of us. And so I just want to ask that you give us the strength and the power to act in love the way you want us to. And also understand, oh God, by doing that, we're also showing you love and worshiping you. I want to thank you so much for this time. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Well, time of offering.